The latest ruling on SB 4, the so-called Sanctuary Cities Law in Texas, puts what critics call the Show Me Your Papers part of SB 4 into effect. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio, and this is Fronteras, a public radio show about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. One Texas city immediately began to change its policy after this week's appellate court ruling. Travis County Sheriff Sally Hernandez now says every person booked into the local jail suspected of being in the country illegally will be detained until federal immigration agents can pick them up. KUT's Audrey McGlinchey has more on the enforcement of SB 4.
Hernandez changed her policy after a panel of three judges lifted a temporary halt to parts of Senate Bill 4 Monday. It was set to become law on September 1st, but in August, a judge in San Antonio temporarily blocked most of it. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton promptly sued to let the law move forward. The New Orleans court has agreed to allow some of it to go into effect. The biggest change is that the court is upholding a requirement that local sheriffs honor all ICE detainer requests. These detainer requests from the federal government ask local officials to hold people booked into jails who are suspected of having entered the country illegally. Several lawyers said Monday their reading of the ruling is that ICE detainer requests are still voluntary. But Attorney General Paxton has said he would begin penalizing local officials who did not honor all detainer requests. They could be subject to jail time or a fine. Sheriff Hernandez is taking no chances. She will now comply with all federal requests to hold suspected undocumented immigrants. This is a change from her policy of only honoring them in the cases of people charged with murder, aggravated sexual assault, and human trafficking. Bob Leibel is the executive director of Grassroots Leadership, an immigrants' rights group.
Any policy changes that lead to more deportations from Travis County have the potential to be deadly. And, you know, I think we really need our elected officials to stand up now and fight legally and also through creative policies to reduce the number of deportations from our community.
The second provision unblocked Monday allows local agencies like police departments to limit how they cooperate with federal immigration agents. The appeals court upheld the part of the law saying you can't outright prohibit all officers from working with immigration authorities, but you can, quote, materially limit cooperation. One interpretation, a department only needs to allow officers whose investigations include working with federal immigration agents to do so. For example, human trafficking. It's important to note that the ruling from this panel of judges is perhaps only temporary. The full case against SB 4 will be heard on November 6. For Fronteras, I'm Audrey McGlinchey.
Another result of the ruling on the state's controversial immigration law, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton is now accepting official complaints from Texans who believe their local officials are enforcing policies that protect undocumented immigrants. Paxton's decision to accept sworn complaints against so-called sanctuary jurisdictions came one day after the judge's decision. There's some good news coming from Mexico. The earthquakes there have not damaged the nation's pipeline system, a system in which U.S. companies are already investing. For the past 3 years, the Mexican oil and gas market has been open to foreign companies, the first time that's happened since 1938. While major American energy companies are operating in Mexico, smaller businesses are hedging their bets while the country grapples with what the government says is mounting theft of oil and gasoline from its pipelines. Marfa Public Radio's Lauren Madelon reports from the southern Mexican state of Veracruz on how politicians and thieves are allegedly profiting from the thefts.
That's the sound of a pipeline in the port city of Coatzacoalcos. It's a hub for ships bringing crude oil from the U.S., the refineries that convert that crude into gasoline, and the pipelines that send that gas to stations across Mexico. What's happening to gas distributed from here is troubling for U.S. energy companies. Many are considering this question. Do we jump into Mexico's oil and gas market? Mexico tells foreign investors that despite entrenched narco violence, pipelines are secure. Many people deny that.
Hay lugares así como muy escondidos. Están a la vista de toda la gente.
They sell stolen gas in places that are well hidden, says taxi driver Jose Avina, but everyone knows where to find them. These days, people who steal gas from pipelines are celebrated in song as saviors who rob to help the people.
Para ayudar a mi pueblo.
Mexican drivers are stressed by rising gas prices brought on by the end of government gas subsidies. They were withdrawn as part of Mexico's energy reform in January, triggering demonstrations in Mexico City and Tijuana, where protests were so intense that the U.S. temporarily closed the border. One state representative, Manuel Banuelos, says that people who tap pipelines are, quote, solving economic problems in their communities. Again, taxi driver Avina.
Tienen luces y sabe uno que ahí venden o compran.
They use colored lights to show who's selling and buying, says Avina. It's organized crime, and everyone knows it, he says.
Todo el mundo lo conoce, ¿no?
In this case, organized crime includes people inside the government and the state-owned oil company Pemex. The former head of the Puebla State Police was charged in 2015 with protecting oil traffickers, so was a senior aide. A mayor in Puebla, who also owns gas stations, was charged in June with buying stolen gas. At least 120 Pemex workers have been arrested for telling criminals where the pipelines are. Valuable information because many pipelines flow through sparsely populated rural Mexico. Jorge Piñon's the former head of Amoco Oil Latin America.
You and I cannot go out and start looking for a pipeline and tap that pipeline. You have to know where it is and at the right place in which to do it.
Váyanse, señores, retírense. Retírense.
This is audio of a Mexican soldier surrounded by residents in rural Puebla. The standoff was recorded in May by a local television station. The army is trying to seize trucks that are ferrying stolen gasoline, and residents resist. The soldier says, "You think you can steal oil with impunity?" In this case, the answer is yes. The army retreats, the stolen gas is driven through the chaos. In addition to incidents like this, pipeline theft has led to deadly explosions and environmental damage. And pipelines have become a political issue, a symbol of the government's inability or unwillingness to deal with organized crime. Miguel Arturo Flores is a leader in the oil workers' union in southern Mexico.
Es un pulpo que tiene los tentáculos.
Pipeline theft is an octopus with many tentacles, he says. He then asks rhetorically, how can we reform the energy sector with shady actors in government allegedly working in concert with criminals?
¿Y cómo se oferta una reforma con esos personajes ahí?
Statements like that make U.S. investors jittery. Tony Payan heads the Mexico Center at Rice University in Houston.
It's not just security that is the ability of companies to protect their pipelines or their trucks that deliver fuel and so on, but also to protect their personnel from kidnapping and from being robbed and assaulted.
Major U.S. energy players like ExxonMobil and BP plan to open branded gas stations here. Their deep pockets allow them to hire protection for their workers. But Payan says smaller oil field service companies in the U.S., like drillers, rig operators, and seismic surveyors, the nuts and bolts of the industry, are waiting to see if the government gets serious about pipeline security. I'm Lorne Madelon in Veracruz.
On the California-Mexico border, work began this week on one of President Trump's major campaign promises. Federal contractors started building prototypes of the president's proposed border wall. Customs and Border Protection chose 8 models from over hundreds submitted. Supervisors expect construction, which is shielded from public view by a green tarp, to last 30 days. When complete, CBP may pick several winners or none. Roy Villarreal, acting chief of the Border Patrol's San Diego sector, said another contractor will evaluate each model, which will be up to 30 feet high and 30 feet long. Next on Fronteras, how a San Antonian who's an icon in Tejano music got his start.
You know, I would go inside the building and I would wait for this one gentleman to come in there and pound on the piano. And that's kind of where I first got the idea of that I was going to like music.
My conversation with Tejano music legend Sonny Osuna after this. We'll be right back. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to Fronteras. Sonny Osuna is an icon of Tejano music. Not only has he been making music since his high school days in the 1950s, but he's an artist whose discography goes on for days. The 74-year-old San Antonio native has a new album that's a retrospective of his oldies R&B hits of the 60s and early 70s. It's called Mr. Brown-Eyed Soul. I recently had a chance to talk with El Cancionero about the new album and a reflection on his life and career. Tell us about your start. You grew up here in the Alamo City?
Yes, actually, I went to Burbank High School here in San Antonio on the south side. And in my early years, I started liking the idea of music coming out of my high school in my high school years. And there was a recreational park in my neighborhood where after we got out of school, instead of going straight home, we would go to the park for at least a couple of hours before while our moms and dads came out of work. And then we'd try to beat them to the house so they think we went straight home. So it worked out pretty well. But all my friends were checking out the basketball and the baseball and the football and, you know, play all over the grounds and stuff. And I wouldn't. You know, I would go inside the building, and I would wait for this one gentleman to come in there and pound on the piano. And that's kind of where I first got the idea of that I was going to like music by what this gentleman was doing with that piano in that recreation hall. If you can imagine, he was about 70 years my senior at the time, and I was about maybe 12, 13 years old, so not really knowing what I was doing there other than I would stand there to hear this one song that he would eventually play. And if he wasn't going to play it, I'd push him to make sure he did it because I had to make my quota to be home before my mom and dad. And so what happened is that at the right time, he would go into a song called Talk to Me. Through the years, what's so amazing is that he became a very well-known musician here, too. Eventually, his name was Randy Garibay, and he went and did Las Vegas, and they did a lot of big gigs. They used to do the music behind Frank Sinatra and Sammy Davis and some of those. But they came back home, and they basically didn't do a whole lot after that. In that time, I am growing. I'm getting ready to record my first song in the recording studio. And guess what song it was? You know, the amazing part, God is so good. God is good. To make a long story short, in this one point, it got to be the number one song in the country on top 40 radio stations across the country, became the number one song for 17 weeks in a row. And the song was called Talk to Me.
Talk to me. Talk to me.
It also made it onto American Bandstand.
Oh, it sure did. It sure did. Let me tell you a little bit about that.
Okay.
What was so surprising was, it was like every young teenager, as soon as school was over, we'd rush home and run as fast as we could to sit in front of the television to watch Dick Clark, American Bandstand. I was seeing what everybody else was doing, what they were saying, and how they expressed themselves, and the songs, and I was learning from the songs. But what happened is that when I physically got there to do the program with Dick Clark, I looked at him like every other teenager, I'm sure, that he was a real tall guy because he stood up on that podium. Well, the guy was shorter than I was. Oh, that was so funny to me. That was why I said, I really felt big. Gosh, I felt so tall. I felt so tall because he was shorter than I was. So that was funny. That was funny.
Well, let's fast forward a little bit because, I mean, you're talking about the kind of music that gets you on American Bandstand, but you're also known for playing Tejano. You're also known for playing country. Your music also has an oldies feel to it. And you also sing in English and in Spanish. So mm-hmm. Your music really encompasses quite a broad swath of genres. And also, you probably have a lot of people in your audiences. So when you look out into the audience, the people who come to your shows, who's usually there?
Well, what's really strange is that over the last 53 years, the different types of people. Well, first of all, let me say that I didn't realize that when I got to the point of Tejano music, I did not realize, only the Lord knew, that Tejano music was going to be a genre of its own, but it was going to have a wide variety of different. We like jazz, we like salsa, we like cumbias, we like boleros, we like polkas, we even like rock and roll, we like it all. We like it all. And being bilingual, gosh, that has been a big gift for us, being bilingual. Now that I was able to do the rock and roll thing and sound a little bit black, that only was a plus for me, because I've been able to maintain myself talking a little bit about the writing. I got to a point where I felt I really needed to write songs. So I wrote Golly Gee, Just a Moment, Put Me in Jail, Smile Not Cry Later, and it goes on and on and on. And I realized what we were doing at the time, that the songs, the new songs I was writing would kind of keep me there for one more year, but they have all helped to identify Sonny and with those particular signature songs. So over the years, you can imagine how many signature songs we have, because then I did that same thing to country, to oldies, to Tejano. Now we're dapping into Christmas carols, and so we're still adding more genres.
So what are your favorite kinds of songs to write? Because, you know, you're known as El Cancionero.
Right.
So what are your favorite kinds of songs? Is it sort of about love and heartbreak, or do you sort of tend to branch off?
Good question. You know, I kind of stayed a little bit more into the heartbreak thing in my younger days. But then after that, I kind of went more and more, especially I think because of the Tejano, more into, I can't say beer drinking, because I have another real good friend of mine. His name is Little Joe out of Temple, Texas. And like he does the beer drinking thing. And I just don't kind of do that. It's not my forte to do that. But I do like that. Man, you broke my heart and look what you've done to me, man, and how could you be so cold, and you'll see, you're going to pay, and that kind of thing. So, and we're kind of proud up there, you know, we're Tejanos, what do you want?
Ya me haces falta tú como el azul al cielo. Estoy unido a ti como el calor al fuego. Me hiciste revivir, me diste fe y consuelo, trajiste para mí cariño nuevo.
Well, and a lot of that is sort of on this new album that's out, Mr.
Right.
Brown Eyed Soul. And
right,
it's a
right.
lot of your soul songs. It's all in English.
Right.
And, of course, you can't have soul in R&B without heartbreak. Right?
Got to.
So
got
all
to.
These songs, tell us about the history behind these songs. Where do they come from in your career?
Well, a lot of the English songs come from our actually growing up. We were copying, like I said, we were listening to a lot of other groups on television and on radio. We are called garage bands here in San Antonio, because we were practicing in our garages. And by garages, I mean we could only practice at one guy's garage maybe a good five times. Because every night that we played, the police would come out to shut us down because people were complaining because they had to get up early in the morning to go to work. And so we did about five of those. And then we go pick on the drummer and say, we're going to be doing your house for five times. And then we go to the guitar player so they wouldn't catch up with us. By the time they kind of caught our number, we were back to the first guy again. So it kind of worked out. So we developed this thing called the garage band sound. Well, the oldies we were developing because of what we were hearing in radio and our friends around us in school and doing the actual living as a teenager, you know, our own experiences with life and pain and all that and growing up, we kind of put it into our songs, not realizing that we were touching a lot of our younger kids that were going through the same things.
So you've been, again, in San Antonio for so many years. What changes have you seen in the music scene and in San Antonio overall?
Quite a few. We reached a point, especially around the height of Tejano music, that I know everybody wants to say that San Antonio started Tejano, and I guess we're not We're just like everybody else. But we have, I think, a much better shot at being able to claim that than other cities, only because most of your major artists, and the Tejano music is humongous, humongous. Of course, it took 50 years to get there, but it's humongous. A lot, or the majority of your artists that became big stars in their careers of Tejano music all resided in San Antonio. So it's kind of a plus for us. And you do have, like I said, your Little Joes over to Temple and René over to Laredo. And so we keep ours coming anyway. We call ourselves old school now. We're old school.
The moon was shining as we stared at the sky. We were grooving as the time rolled by.
Sonny Osuna's latest CD is Mr. Brown Eyed Soul on Big Crown Records. And that's it for Fronteras and our stories from the Southwest this week. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org. Alexis Yancey produced this broadcast. Michelle Dubac is our executive producer. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Thanks for joining us. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.
Should I stay?